Thanks for tuning in to the Boiler Express podcast. Join us each week as we dive into all things Purdue sports. You'll hear in-depth analysis of our previous and upcoming games, as well as interviews with players and people involved in the Purdue sports fandom. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and YouTube for our live stream shows as well.
Are we live?
That's how it works now.
Great. I want to host. Awesome. Are we live?
Well, I didn't know we did a couple practice runs. Anyway, good evening, Boiler Makers, and welcome to the Boiler Express podcast. A few things have happened. Are things great right now? Not really. I mean, you know, things could be better. The football program is having a day, having a week, having a couple weeks even. Cody, how are we doing? Good to have you here, buddy. So let's see. Graham Harrell was fired. Kind of needed to happen. I think Graham was a good dude, is a good dude. I think, you know, he did everything he could, I guess. I mean, his rap sheet before he came to Purdue was impressive, but sometimes it just doesn't work out, and I think that's what happened there. You hate to see a guy lose his job, but sometimes I like that a lot because it covers the rest of his face, by the way. That's nice.
Yeah, trying to figure this out. We're flying by the seat of our pants.
But we have a handsome panel today.
I love how you followed up. I'm glad the comments covering Russ's face too. We got a handsome panel.
I was talking about Frank. We got Frank the big brain, Frank the tank, the man, the myth, the legend. If you need a stat or a number, he's got you. Frank, how we doing?
I'm doing well, Dylan. All sorts of things to be excited about, but you know, game didn't go like we wanted to last weekend, but given all that, doing well, Dylan. Happy to be here.
Then standing at 6'1", straight from the nursing home in lower Louisville area, Russ Johnson. Russy Hot Takes, how we doing?
Good. Got to the game Saturday. Obviously, like Frank said, it wasn't the outcome we wanted, but I was still very impressed by the showing out by the fans, the turnout. There we go. I knew there was an out in there somewhere I was looking for. The turnout was great. First three quarters was pretty great. And then, you know, the last quarter happened. So,
yeah, man, I didn't go. I'm going to be honest. I didn't feel like
you had a date, right?
Anish was not happy that you were not there, by the way.
Who
was? Anish was not happy.
Nishi was, I love Anish. That you get a hug from Anish. It's one of the Boiled Sports guys are so good at hugs. I don't know what it is. You got, this is zoomed in. You got all those guys, Jay there Money, Anish, and the man, the myth, the legend, Boiler Dowd. 10 out of 10 huggers, those guys. Love them to death. Love hanging out with them at Purdue games. I did have a date. But also, I just honestly did not feel. I was like, this is going to, driving 6 hours, three there, three back. It was close. I mean, we didn't lose 66-7. So that's, you know, that's good. That's great. It wasn't an absolute demolishing.
Is that where the bar is now, Dylan?
We give Indiana State a game, right? Beat them 49-0, come back, get your butt kicked by Notre Dame of all teams. And then look at the schedule ahead. I mean, you've got Oregon, Ohio State, Michigan State, Indiana, who's apparently good now, which upsets me. It's looking rough. It's not looking ideal. I'm just hoping we get the bucket. I mean, that's really all I want. I just want to beat IU. I won't be at the Oregon game. It's on a Friday. And now that I have like a real job with real bosses, I can't take off. So it won't be a Friday night. I think I forget who's taking my tickets for that. But it's going to be a tough road, but I think we got it. I'll be at Ohio State and Iowa this weekend. I'm going to pull some Connor Stallion stuff and you wear some sunglasses.
Have a question for you, Russ. I've been known to perhaps get into a disagreement or two on social media, but currently involved in one right now. And this person who was at the game said that there was no buzz before the game. There was just no enthusiasm from the fans. Everything was dead and dreary. There was nothing going on campus. And I didn't see that. Am I right? Am I wrong? What do you think, Russ?
I concur with you, Frank. It definitely, you know, we were already commenting before the game started. We were impressed with, you know, like I said earlier, just a few minutes ago, the turnout was awesome. The volume in Ross Aid was awesome. Now, I will say I got halfway nervous. I went in about an hour before kickoff. And when I went in an hour before kickoff, it was like half red, half black. Now, granted, it was like 5% of the seats were taken at that point. But I was like, oh, man, is this like, you know, because Northwestern just sold out, right? So did the Northwestern fans sell us out for that game? And then our Nebraska fans coming in and buying all the tickets because they're like, hey, we can travel to a sure win away game. But it wasn't. It was still about 90% Purdue fans. And even the John Purdue Club, which I, you know, I've attacked them a little bit. even full. Their seating was like 80% full.
Whoa.
And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, they did a good job.
You whoa, know, it's okay. A big deal when the Rich Whites show up.
Yeah. Yeah. So, whoa. You know, and I really think, you know, even the attitude,
tell me I'm wrong.
You know, the attitude after the game by Walters and obviously the decision to fire Harrell, but you know, the account of Walt, like hitting the wall after the game, things like that. This was not a game that we went into just because of the last 2 weeks we were going to lose. Like we were going in going, hey, we're going to right the ship. We're starting the Big Ten season 1-0. And, you know, you saw obviously a much better team in the first half, especially better defense, I should say, much better defense in the first half, first three quarters, to where I still think there are some bright spots ahead this season. Maybe not a bowl game, but I still think there are good things ahead.
Yeah, and, you know, Cody made a comment earlier. He said, you know, we had the mojo, but we drained the tank. I think there's a degree of truth to that, in my opinion. I think that if you would have told me that the game was going to be tied at halftime, I would have been thrilled. If you would have told me that before we went into the game,
tied at zero, nonetheless.
Yeah, tied at zero. And honestly, that's the type of game I like. And if you would have said the score was going to be 7-3 going into the fourth quarter, I would have been equally more, you know, just as thrilled. That just, you know, things kind of went off the rails at that point. You know, and this is another game that we had it right there and we just let it slip through our fingertips. And Russ, you and I met up at halftime and I said, I think we can win this game. And you said, I know we can win this game. And you're right. I had things gone our way, just, you know, and gotten a little bit of more luck on our side. Had we moved the ball a little bit better, I think we definitely could and probably would have won the game. Maybe take away the pick six too. But I think the interesting thing for me is that we had spurts on offense. You know, you look at the beginning of the second half, we came out and moved the ball with ease down the field, ended up only getting
like three third down conversions in one drive, right? Like three or four.
Yeah. It was great. Drive. And then in the fourth quarter, nearing garbage time, let's say, moved the ball pretty well, you know, in that time period as well. But you know, I think it's safe to say there, you know, there was some frustration among the fans around me. One guy in front of me has a problem with Markevious Brown. Apparently, the whole time was talking about how bad Markevious Brown is. I thought he actually played a pretty good game personally. I thought that was really weird, just of a guy to single out. But
I do want to say, sorry, before we get away too far away from the draining comment, I do want to say I think it's a much different atmosphere in the locker room and on the sideline when, you know, okay, we talked about complimentary football going in this week, right? Or at least the guys on the team talked about complimentary football going into the Nebraska game. That's what we got to play is complimentary football. I think it's a much different feel if you're tied 28-28 at halftime instead of 0-0, right? Because if you're 28-28 at halftime, it's still an exciting game, right? Like you're going back and forth. You're moving the football on offense. You're going, okay, cool. Like we just got to get a stop on defense, right? When it's tied 0-0 at halftime, it can really drain a team that said, hey, going into Nebraska, we're going to play complimentary football. And then they shut the other team out in the first half and we can't score a point. That definitely does drain. I feel like drain the tank a little bit. Like it definitely, you know, doesn't sit great. Cause it's like, all right, like, I know we didn't have a great first three games or last 2 weeks on defense, but we've done our job. Go get us a point. So
yeah, you know, I think the same can be said about the Oregon State game too. You know, in that the defense, at least in the first half, like they did their job, and the offense just couldn't move the football. So, and you know, spoiler alert for anyone who doesn't know, Purdue did relieve offensive coordinator Graham Harrell of his duties on Sunday. Yeah, shocker. And this is something that a lot of people were calling for, and it's something that I will just be really curious to see what kind of difference it makes. But listening to Gus Hartwig talk today in his interview, he talked about, you know, playing hurry up is tiring. It's tiring for an offensive line because you don't have as much time between snaps, and that makes a lot of sense. But I think that's the only way Harrell knew how to.
We weren't playing hurry up the last. We were 3 for 21 or 3 for 22 on third down. Like, we were going 3 and out. You don't play hurry up when you're going 3 and out.
Well, I'm saying from a no huddle perspective, you know.
Yeah.
Like not even, but what we did see Purdue huddle against Nebraska some. But I think, you know, as Walter said in the press conference this week, that, you know, if your defense just, you know, stops them on like a 6 or 7 or 8 play drive, but, you know, holds them to no points, it's maybe not advantageous for the offense to come in with this gung ho, we're going to play really fast mentality, just from a give your defense a break perspective. And I understand that's what Graham Harrell knows. And he comes from the Mike Leach tree where, you know, the air raid and the whole thing is you run your offense quickly. You don't let the defense substitute. But I just don't know, you know, especially with the depth of the offensive line or the lack of depth. I don't know if that's the best strategy, but I don't know. What kind of impact do you think this is going to make in your all's opinion? Was this a, you know, we have to make a change, so let's just point at something and say, okay, let's change that? Or is this a calculated decision and we think we can actually see some improvement here?
I mean, I hope to see some improvement. I mean, it's got to be better than what we've seen. No, I mean, I think it had to happen. Someone had to, for lack of a better word, take the fall for the abysmal start to the season. Shout out to that big word I just used. But like, you know, it's just a lot of people are calling for Walt. Now, obviously, I need wine. I don't even own any wine. That's how classy I am. That's why Frank is the class of the podcast. I think it needed to happen. Obviously, offense has struggled. We got a lot of dudes. We got a lot of great players on offense when you look at it, like Maccabee, Card, Reggie Love, Edrin, and so many more, that with the talents there, just why can't they make touchdowns happen? Like, why is scoring so hard when you have a lot of talent on, you know, the line's a little better this year. Card is looking a little bit more comfortable. Edrin is the size of most tight ends, but he's very fast, and I don't know how that humanly works, but he makes it happen. It needed to happen. Like I said at the start of the show, great dude. Like, you know, I think Harrell's a great guy, and, you know, he came from a really good start to his career, you know, USC and so on, and, you know, Mike Leach prodigy, and I loved Mike Leach. I think he was great. And so when he came in and knowing he was a guy from Leach's tree, it's like, whoa, like, that's exciting. That's going to be fun. It wasn't that fun, unfortunately. I wish him all the best. I hope he gets a good job and does well after this, but it just didn't work out. And sometimes that happens, and sometimes you got to do something, because if Walt didn't do anything, man, he was going to get eaten alive in many different ways. And so, it, you know, had to happen. You hate to see a guy lose his job, but it is what it is. And hopefully we'll see some improvement, at least in the next few weeks, if not this upcoming week.
Yeah, I think first half's going to be huge against Wisconsin. I think that's where we get an advantage. You know, kind of similar to what Ohio State did when they fired Holtman, right, and came in and beat us. You know, we're going to have a guy that, you know, while Walt even mentioned, we're just going to continue running some of the same stuff we did before, just maybe more often. But there still is going to be maybe a new wrinkle or two that we've wanted to try or was in our arsenal we just hadn't used. So I think that you'll see a different look, and Wisconsin will have none of that on tape. So they'll have halftime to adjust to it. But can we go get something in the first half? And that's been the story against Wisconsin, right? Is they get up on us, you blink, and it's 21-0, 7 minutes in the first quarter against Wisconsin, right? Like, that's been the MO. So if we can get on top of them, I still think anything can happen, because there's a lot of people out there. If you haven't been watching Wisconsin this year, they're not your granddaddy's Wisconsin. Like,
they're not your, they're not your Wisconsin granddad.
Not my Wisconsin. there, a lot of people put them in the bottom four and the bottom five in the Big Ten. A lot of people have them down there just a tier above us and Northwestern, UCLA, whatever. So even though it is at Madison, you know, they have beat us 20 something years straight now. Like, I don't think that it's just, we have no shot Saturday.
When's the last time we beat Wisconsin?
Well, they said, Gus Hartwig said today that Dylan Thienemann was not born last time we beat Wisconsin.
Good. So that's good. That's
great. So it's been that long.
So he's probably like, what?
But Russ, you make a, you, well, he's a true sophomore, so probably something 2021, something like that. But Russ, you do make a good point in that sometimes I like to listen to podcasts of other schools, and I want to know what they're saying, you know, about Purdue. Who do they need to stop? What are the keys to win? And but I did listen to a Wisconsin podcast today, and I mean, they seem to think that this is going to be the equivalent of playing a MAC school for them. I mean, and I know this is just three people's opinions, but I mean, they see this as they literally said that it's, don't be surprised if we're playing third and fourth string players to figure out our depth chart, which I thought was absolutely fascinating, given that this team barely escaped from, you know, a Western Michigan team early in the season, and honestly just hasn't looked great against better competition. So I truly think that, at least from the fans' perspective, that they believe this is going to be a bloodbath in their favor. I think we're going to give them a little bit more of a difficult time personally, but we'll have to see what happens. But man, would it be great to get this monkey off our back though, wouldn't it? To be able
of
to,
all times to finally beat Wisconsin. Like, it'd be one of the most like surprising times. It'd be a very random time.
The ironic thing of thinking that they're going to smoke us like we're some MAC school is they played a MAC school this year, and they only beat him 28-14.
Got him.
And it was tied in the fourth quarter too. Like, yeah, they pulled away late, but like, yeah. So
like I said, it's not my Wisconsin thing. Yeah.
Not my Wisconsin.
And they're a Wisconsin team who's playing with an inexperienced quarterback who candidly hasn't looked great. And now they kind of have a problem. And it was interesting to hear on this podcast that they don't really know who their best running back is. And they were kind of hoping that this running back, all the running backs would just run all over Purdue and let, you know, this game would help decide that. But I mean, they've all looked good at different times throughout the season, but they effectively have four running backs who could start. And I think it could just be, you know, a by committee thing, which that's kind of what you expect of Purdue. But, you know, if it were me and I were just designing a ideal game plan for this game, it would be to score quick, to put up quick points, if we're capable of doing that. You know, I think that the defense, if we can get out of the first quarter, you know, 14-0 hypothetically, I like Purdue's shot of winning this game, because Wisconsin's never been a team historically that's good at coming from behind, and Purdue historically wears down over time against Wisconsin, because the way they just throw power at you over and over and over again. You know, I think that if there's one key, it's just going to be to get out to an early lead. I don't know though. I really don't know what to expect, you know, from this new offense. We haven't talked about who's calling the plays, but it's Jason Simmons, who's an analyst. You know, he was the former running backs coach at Miami, Ohio, where he actually had a decent amount of success. But before that, he was a head coach at a high school in Indianapolis, Ben Davis, for 5 years. So, you know, a guy who has experience, but maybe not so much at the college level. But how are y'all feeling about that? Do you wish it was someone different? Do you think it's a good idea to keep someone internally? Just what are your thoughts there?
I think it's a good idea. I mean, I think you got to kind of keep it internal, especially with those guys. You know, college football is different, right? Like, it's not, you know, the NFL is a business. And it's a lot easier to sit there and say, hey, let's rotate guys around. Let's try this. Let's try that. But like in college football, you only get now it's like 6 or 7 years of eligibility, but you only get technically 4 years of eligibility. And so you can't just say like, well, season's over four weeks in, because you've got these guys, especially that transferred here, and the people that are going to look at the program and go, okay, how are they going to treat this season? Like, if I transfer there and we start 1-3 next year, what's going to look like? Like, you've still got to try to, you know, put something together and put a winning game plan together. And that's kind of what Walters talked about, right? When he named him the play caller, was that, you know, what gives us the best chance to win? Who's got the experience? Who's got an idea of maybe what he wants to work with and what he wants to do? And the guy, you know, did well at Miami, Ohio last year, right? I think they set records for rushing, which that last time they did that well was like 2003, I think it was. Like, so, you know, again, before Bachby was born, right? So, you know, you're going over 20 years ago, them having that good of a season last year. So I think that, you know, it was promising seeing some different things on offense this last week. Like, we did put an extra lineman in there a time or two, not just on the goal line, but in running situations or in situations where we thought, hey, we need to kind of keep the ball moving, keep the clock moving. So I think we're going to see even more of that this week. And I think that is a good job. You want a guy that's got experience when you have a situation like this. This isn't the time to put like, hey, you know, hey, Dylan, you play a lot of college football, EA college football. Come on in, call plays. Like,
I'm ready. No,
you want to get a guy that has some kind of experience so that people can go, okay, this guy knows what he's doing. He's been here before. Let's try to get this thing back on track.
Yeah, so Coach Walt called me and he said, Dylan, I know you play a lot of college football, 25, and, you know, you and Russ could be great offensive coordinators for us. And I said, you know what, Coach, I'm busy. Yeah, I wish I could. But, you know, got a lot of things going on and just couldn't do it. No, I don't know, man. Who else was going to do it? And I know I saw somewhere on Twitter where, and I don't know if it's just a rumor or there's any fact behind this, but they called some quote unquote big names to see if they'd be interested in being the interim offensive coordinator. And apparently they denied it. Now, I don't know if that's true.
I think Walter said in his press conference that, like, he had people reaching out to him. Yeah, but I mean, and so his explanation for going with someone internal was that just to not reinvent everything.
Yeah,
you know, no, they're using the same terminology. And the reason you don't want to elevate a position coach is because, you know, the position coaches have that bond with their players already. We got the OHIO guys saying define big names. Would love to know that. Would love to know who those big names are. No names were used.
Eric, I don't like your tone.
Big names with impressive resumes was I think close enough to verbatim. Also, I do want to address a question we had back a few minutes ago from Cody. How can we have the number one special teams in the nation? Shout out special teams with the record that we have. I mean, I think you know, we've punted the ball very well. We've punted the ball a lot,
a lot,
and a lot. We've allowed very few returns. And so Cody, I was at the Notre Dame. I've been to actually every home game, but was at the Notre Dame game, and to see Notre Dame's punt returners turn around and literally run toward the end zone, not expecting the punts to go as far as they did, was like, I kind of raised my eyebrows and said, man, we have a really good punter. But our punt coverage has been fantastic. I mean, they catch the ball and three guys are right in their face. It's kind of a silly thing, in my opinion, to I mean,
have the number one punting a forced fumble on one of those punts. Like, he had it was kind of like that Fresno State hit he had the first game of the year last year, where the guy did not call a fair catch and Thieneman leveled the dude when he caught it.
Mm-hmm. I would hate to see Dylan Thieneman running at me full steam.
That was when he was, let's say, unknown to, you know, no one knew what Dylan Thieneman would become. And while we're on the subject of Dylan Thieneman, we haven't talked about the defense, but Russ, the first thing I noticed as Russ turns off his camera there for a second, but Dylan, the first thing I noticed when Purdue came out on defense is that Dylan Thieneman's in the box. You know, Dylan Thieneman's not deep.
Yeah.
Jefferson's deep. Thieneman's up in the box, but you know, it was a completely different look. I don't know what'd you think? Do you think it worked well? I think if I had to guess, I mean, Antonio Stevens being hurt, obviously he's our, you know, play up in the box safety. But I think part of it too was, you know, we've been cooked on the edge a little bit. And yeah, I think to have some of that speed up there may have, you know, helped drive that decision. But, you know, how did you think the defense looked in sort of its new alignment?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it worked. You know, we allowed 0 points in the first half and the defense looked a lot better. I think DT coming up closer kind of helps, and he can pressure, he can do, you know, he's quick, man. I mean, we all know how fast he is. It's incredible how quick he is on his feet. And so if he can, you know, not only, you know, work the backfield, but also maybe once in a while get some pressure on the quarterback. I mean, and we know he can hit, like we just said, like the guy's a jack of all trades. He can do a little bit of everything on defense. So I think it helps, and it makes it exciting. He's an exciting player, and, you know, only giving up 28 points with the after the last couple games, it's pretty impressive. So, yeah, I mean, it definitely worked. It definitely, you know, I think it threw Nebraska off a little bit because I'm sure that, you know, watching film, you see Dylan Thiedemann 100 yards back, and they that think, you know, they went into the game thinking that's probably what's going to happen. And then Dylan Thiedemann was like, no, sir, I'm gonna sneak up on up here. And I don't think they're ready for it. They didn't look like they're ready for it. So I think it helps out a lot. And I'd like to see more of it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'd like to see more of it, too. And want to address comment here. Eric's asking what's in my wine glass. I wish I could remember the name, but there's a fancy little wine shop near my house. And they had a 2009 Napa Syrah. I'm a big fan of Syrah. And so naturally bought it.
It's not good.
It's very acidic, so it's every what? Sip is painful, but I'm drinking it because of how much it costs. So
what's the wine you can find at Walmart with the foot on the label?
Barefoot.
That's the only wine I've ever had, and that's like probably what, 10 bucks at Walmart. Like, I'm the least I didn't even know what a filet mignon
great
was
value.
A few months back, and I was like, wait, what's a filet mignon? And you had to explain to me what that was. And I've had it before, didn't know what it was, but you know, if you don't give me a steak sandwich, I don't know what we're doing.
You ever had a Big Mac? It's not that.
That is an American delicacy. Good old. I saw, you know, I thought about getting a Big Mac the other day, and I was like, you know what? I don't want to die young, but it looks delicious. It looks so good. Big Macs are worth
it. So, Russ, we were talking about the changes we saw defensively from a personnel standpoint and a positional standpoint. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, it was cool to see Thiedemann up there getting much more involved. But I do feel like we gave up some big plays that might not have happened had he been that deep safety still. So it's kind of a, you know, there's some give and take. Like there was a play, and they talked about it too. Walters talked about how when they put him in the box, they not only just, you know, did that to cover for Stevens being out, but they also put him in positions to make quick plays. You know, I don't know if you heard that in the post-game presser. And he did. There was one play where I thought he was going to get a sack. And it looked like then the receiver actually caught the ball, but then they said incomplete. It did get knocked out. But it was cool seeing him up there flying around, getting more involved. But I do still think his best role is probably that deep role.
Yeah, and you know, how do you think Joe Jefferson played? You know, at the free safety position.
He played okay. I mean, I think he, you know, doesn't have the experience that Thiedemann has obviously in that role. And so you have to react very quickly, I feel like, in that role. I feel like Thiedemann back there has this internal clock where it's like he almost counts to two and then makes a decision on what he's doing, because he's not going to sit back there and just watch. And I don't think Jefferson quite had that quickness and also the great reads that Thiedemann had. But I don't think he was terrible. I think it was a good experiment. I think that it opens the door for maybe switching that around in game as well. You know, like if we need to switch something up, if something's not working, if we want Thiedemann more involved, we can move him up and put Jefferson back there instead of just sticking Thiedemann back there the whole game. So I think that'd be a good weapon to have moving forward.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, in my mind, his performance in that game is kind of shadowed by the taunting penalty that he got. Because it was a tackle for a loss, right? And then, you know, stands over there in real time at the game. You know, I thought, what a terrible
call.
I think
it was just like a short game. You know, it was like right at the line of scrimmage or something. It was off the sideline.
Okay,
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was going to bring up third and long, you know, and then we give him, what, 15 yards. But no, it was the right call. He stood over him, which, you know, you can't do. And I'm in the camp of like celebrate when you win the game, man. Like, don't celebrate when you make a tackle, you know, just like celebrate when you win the game. It's like, it just, and so that really frustrated me, unfortunately. I mean, and how many times in the last, you know, 7-8 years have we seen those types of things like cost us games, you know, the Payne Durham and then Jeff Brohm back-to-back unsportsmanlike penalties at Syracuse comes to mind. Lorenzo Neal against Northwestern, you know, where we gave Northwestern a first down that sealed the game. It was Rondale Moore's. I mean, it's just, it seems to happen a lot. But that's the kind of stuff, you know, that Walt said, you know, he's got to clean up. We have to do a better job of, you know, and then Nyland Green with what, at least three pass interference calls. Going back and watching them, I felt like all. Did you disagree with the calls? After watching it, I thought they were all good calls.
Here's the thing: by the rule, yeah, it was the right call, but I hate it. I hate it. I think I texted that in the group chat that's probably the one rule I hate the most in college football right now. If I had to change one, is I would change it kind of like they've changed offensive fouls in basketball a little bit, right? Like, to where if a guy like pump fakes and causes the contact, that it's not just an automatic defensive foul. I hate those calls because they reward a bad throw 9 times out of 10, right? Like 9 times out of 10, it's because the throw is short or behind the defender, not really where the receiver can get to it. And then the receiver just runs into it. So it almost felt like at one point Nebraska was like, hey, our best offense is just throw a bad pass. And then the receivers just run into the defender and they're going to call it today. You know, so like, you know, by the letter of the law, was it a good call or was it the right call? Yes. But I think that needs to change. I think some competition committee needs to look at it, which they probably won't because it hurts the offense, right? Like the competition committee and the rules changing usually tries to impact the game by making it higher scoring and making the offense more exciting. But I hated that. I hated that. So, and back, those penalties too, back to those like celebration penalties, I want to give Jefferson the benefit of the doubt a little bit. I think that his intention more was he was walking back towards our side of the field. It wasn't like he walked towards their sideline to step over him, or he walked back to their backfield. And I've talked about it before when Brohm was here, that those penalties, they do irk me because it's like you said, Frank, like, you know, when the game's over, celebrate. When the game's over, react. But, you know, it's 60 minutes out there. You only get 48 chances at this. Like, and you get these grinding games that you make a big play, and it was chippy back and forth. There was some gamesmanship back and forth, right? Like, Rule had that challenge in the first half, and then almost because he was, like, upset that it got failed, he took a delay of game to try to make the punt easier. And Walt's like, nah, not so fast. We're declining the delay game. Punt it from there. You know, like, there was some chippiness and some gamesmanship in this game. And to have something like that, like, you know, it's not – you're not about talking about a helmet-to-helmet shot that's protecting the players. You're talking about, like – a dude stepping over a guy to go back to this. Come on now. Like, to me, that's a little bit tough.
I just felt like he looked, I mean, and I don't agree with the rule, but, you know,
we'll say it this way. The Nebraska fan next to me didn't like the call. He was like, come on now. Like, let him play.
If you guys hate celebrating, you'd hate to see a football game my third graders play at recess. Those kids are doing the incomplete. They're doing the too short celebration, and I'm like, breaking news, you're all short. Like, don't be doing that. They'll do, I guess there's like a sword thing where they got the sword and they put it like onto their side. They do that, but the one that cracks me up is the too short, and I'm like, you all are short. Don't
yeah, it's not even the right sport really for that. But yeah, I mean, the one that still bothers me to this day is the Jalen Graham high stepping into the end zone on the pick six. Yeah. And they like, well, not the, like, I get it's the way the penalty was enforced. So for anyone who doesn't remember, pick six, Jalen Graham high steps into the end zone, and you, okay, that's a 15-yard penalty. But not only that, they wipe the touchdown off the board. And
they go back to the point where he started high stepping too.
Yeah.
So it's like,
It was from the point where he started. So the pick six didn't happen. So it wasn't 15 yards after the kickoff, right? It was they wiped the touchdown off the board. But it's very clearly stated in the rule book. I had to dig through and find it that altering your stride in celebration silly rule, but yeah, it's just, yeah, that was
nonsense. Let the kids celebrate.
Silly. Agreed. Yeah. There's a comment here. Can you believe the B-Town Bums are going to go 6-0? We don't know that. We don't know that. You know, I honestly, it, as much as I don't like Indiana, they've looked good. And Coach Cigarette's doing a good job down there. So
at Northwestern, they're going 6-0.
Western, yeah.
The field on the lakeside property. Imagine like in a few weeks or a month or so, that's going to be so cold. That's going to be ridiculous. That's going
to make why they're going to the game in West Lafayette instead of up there in the lake.
That's
going to
make Lambeau look like a nice, you know, Arizona property.
So Cody wants to know which one will be one to clean up for the most this week, offense or defense? Offense for me, 100%.
Oh, yeah. It's offense.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel like the defense's struggles are a lot of that is perpetuated by the offense's inability to move the ball. I mean, really, when you go back and you look at the last two games, I mean, Purdue stopped Nebraska, held them to 0 points in the first half, but offense couldn't move the ball. When you go back to Oregon State, you know, they would hold Oregon State the first few drives, offense come out and get a 3-and-out. So I felt like the offense hasn't rewarded the defense when they do well. And you know, it's not like, I mean, we used to complain about the opposite problem under Brohm, like, hey, we're tired of winning games 54-47, you know, and giving up 500 yards. Can we have some defense? But I think I hate, you know, the term complimentary football has been thrown around a lot lately. But I think the defense has been put in a lot of unfair situations in the last two games. So that's what I think.
Yeah, like I said, it's a different atmosphere and a different feel in the sideline, in the locker room when your offense is doing all the work and your defense can't get a stop. At least it's like, it's exciting. You feel like you always have a chance to win. When it's the opposite, it's kind of like, well, we can't win a game if we're not going to score a touchdown. Like,
yeah, I was talking to, and the Nebraska fans around me were fantastic. The nicest people ever. Also insanely high football IQ too. Like insanely way more than the average.
Yeah, I thought you were going to stop that after high. They were extremely high. Yeah,
no, just a really, really high. I mean, so there were a few flags, and there were a few flags that were, you know, offensive pass interference, illegal pick, and he called it before the flag got thrown. Oh, that's flag coming back, and then boom, here comes the flag. And, I mean, just all sorts of, you know, things that the average, there was an illegal formation that he called pre-snap as well. I mean, just things that the average fan doesn't necessarily recognize.
Did he have an earpiece then? Was he pulling a Connor Stallions? Was he like running the game from the sideline?
He did have one AirPod in.
Launch the investigation.
Yeah. Uh-oh. But I mean, it was happening in real time. But Russ on the second blocked punt, or the first blocked punt, excuse me. Nyland Green recovered the punt, was running or field goal, excuse
field
me,
goal.
Blocked field goal. Nyland Green's running down the field, and the ref on the opposite side of the field throws a flag. And I'm like, what on earth could he have seen that the three officials who were in the mix of all that didn't see? And he goes, oh no, the Nebraska players were running onto the field. He's gonna call a sideline warning. That's exactly what he called. I'm like, man, like this guy's watching the whole field. Like it was impressive. Super nice people. It was the first time at Purdue, talked about how great the stadium was, talked about how great the campus was, talked about how cool all of our traditions were. Loved the train, loved the drum, loved the fact that we play the other team's fight song. They loved the fact that some people still say IU sucks at the kickoffs. I mean, they thought that was awesome. And they were like, we can get behind that. And I mean, just tremendous people. And even ones I interacted with in the concourse, great, great people. So
we got to stop the IU sucks chant right now. It just can't.
No,
they don't suck. Look, they're actually good. You can't, if they were 0-6, okay, I get it. But when we're playing the way we're playing and IU's going to be 6-0 in a few days, it's tough. It's tough. We can't be doing that.
Comment here, our offensive yardage was almost outdone by our penalty yards. Tough pill to swallow. And then Another comment. Here's a question. Would you hire former Purdue greats to coach the offense? I'm not saying big name like Breeze. Okay. So, I mean, playing doesn't always translate to coaching. I think as we've seen, you know, across a lot of sports, you know, and we did bring in Drew Brees to help coach the bowl game. You know, we saw how well that went. Now we're saying obviously not Drew Brees, but you know, I'm trying to think of who realistically could.
I'm going to throw his hat in the ring. Friend of the program, Vinny Sutherland, Coach Vin.
Vinny Sutherland, bring him in to coach the offense.
Coach Vinny has a good ring to it. No, I don't. Yeah, I doubt it. Yeah, I doubt he. He's living it up down in Florida. There's no way he wants to come up here and coach. But
that sounds like a coach you're afraid of.
Hey, Coach Vinny sounds like a little Italian guy.
Also, if you listen to Breeze talking about coaching the bowl game last year, he wants nothing to do with coaching, at least not right now. So,
do you blame him? He's got a.
And I know Cody said like not talking about those names. So, but the people that are still saying Breeze, like, dude, he don't want to coach.
That's a good point. Kerrigan is coaching with the Commanders right now with David Blau. There's a couple Boilers with the Commanders. Now Kerrigan would be a good fit. I like that. Rod Woodson. I brought this up in the group chat. Look at his XFL record with the Las Vegas Vipers. Went real bad. Love Rod. Great guy. Talked to Stu the other day. Stu said Rod hung out at his house for like 6 hours and hung out with the family. Rod's a great dude. And you know, but coaching, I don't know. Nothing I'd want to try. Love you, Rod. We know you're watching.
So, Russ, what do you think happens at Camp Randall this weekend?
Boilers by a billion.
I didn't wear that hat on purpose.
Stealing Dylan's thunder. I think, and I hope, because that's more, I think, what we're going to talk about the rest of the season is what we hope, not what we think, because what we think might hurt.
It always hurts when I think.
I really hope we, you know, this lights a fire, as it can often do when you make a change like that. Because, you know, one thing I want to say, too, about that change, I think that shows that this isn't a four-year plan anymore. You know, we're not in four-year football anymore with college football now. Like, it's like hey, you know, we're not necessarily saying you've got to win or go to bowl games in the first year or two, but you got to show us something. And when it falls at the head coach's doorstep, it's also his job to then say three or four games in, if it's not working and it's really not working, we got to make a change. Because if not, it's going to be my butt next. So I do think it lights a fire. I think that the guys will feel good about it being someone in the room and in the locker room that's calling the plays now and running the offense. And I think we do jump on Wisconsin a little bit. I think it, you know, they don't expect us to give them a fight like we might give them. You know, hopefully we get at least 10, 14, 17 points on the board in the first half, are able to hold them to maybe seven or less. And then just kind of grind out a W that way, just with the run game, being physical, getting these guys just motivated to like go smack someone in the mouth and get tired of people saying some of the things they're saying right now on Twitter, on wherever, on social media. And I think that they want to come out and smack somebody in the mouth. And then,
yeah.
So if we win, this question for both of you guys, if we win against Wisconsin, how much pressure does this relieve?
A lot. I don't want to say like everyone's going to forget the last few games, but like if Walt can beat Wisconsin for the first time in a bajillion years, that's going to make his seat a lot less hot, and it's going to make his life a hell of a lot easier. Because like, I think Coach Walt's the type of guy that is football 24/7. Like, he's, I think most coaches are that way. So I imagine he's been stewing all week, and I hope the players are stewing too. I hope to see some real pissed off energy. They're like, hey, let's finally get this stuff together. Let's figure it out, and let's throw Wisconsin down to the ground. And I hope to see that from the staff. I hope to see that from the players. And I think we will. I hope we will, and I think we will. I just want to see big hits, some little bit of trash talk. Not enough for a penalty, but just a little bit of trash talk. Just keep it minimum. Don't let the refs hear it. I just want to see chippiness. I want to see energy. I want to see pissed off energy. And I want to see a group of dudes that want to – like the Alabama player had on his, what do they call it? the black
visor.
No, the
glare strips.
Yeah, whatever that's called. And he said, "Kill everybody." I want to see that energy. I want to see that energy. Not literally, metaphorically in football terms, kill everybody. I don't know, man. I just want to see some energy and if Walt and company beat Wisco, that'll be a very big deal.
Some players put kill everyone on their eye black, and some players put Bible verses, you know.
Eye black.
Not everybody's the same.
that was the meme. I mean,
some Bible verses, you know, may mention killing people too. So, you know, there's a little bit of a Venn diagram. You
know? We're not going to get into the religion at this podcast.
But, I think to answer your question from my perspective, Frank, I think it depends on what fan you're talking about. Does it relieve pressure? Because you have fans, you know, we talk about this fan base being the fan base that calls into Painter when we're number one in the country and says that we need to change things. You know, so there'll be fans out there that go, "Oh, well, why couldn't we have beat Nebraska then? Or why couldn't we have beat?" Well, now, of course, now that this, we're not going to go to a bowl game anyways, then I don't know why we even bothered trying to beat Wisconsin. Well, you know, so like I think it, from in the grand scheme of things, it definitely relieves pressures from, you know, the athletics office viewpoint. It relieves pressure because this department, this program is not where it was two coaches ago. Right, I'm not even going to say the guy's name. Like, it's not where it was two coaches ago. It's not. It's not the same program. It's not the same era. The turnout we have with the fan base right now is amazing. But that also means the athletic department doesn't want to lose that, right? Like, we don't want to ride that out until it gets back to only 10,000 fans. So, like, they're going to be proactive, and they're going to go, "Hey, we're getting $70 million a year from the Big Ten for the media deal, let alone all the other money that's coming in. So we've got to get a winning product, or at least a watchable product on the field ASAP."
Yeah, just every time I hear someone say, you know, "Oh, this is just Hazel all over again," you know, I remind them that we got blown out by Central Michigan at home, barely beat Indiana State, last second touchdown against Indiana State, a team that we just beat 49-0. You know, I think that it's hard right now because we, you know, back to back years have played a top five most difficult schedule. And I think that, you know, as fans, we want to see our team be competitive. And obviously, you know, no one expected the 66-7. And honestly, I think if we win that game by 14 points, things aren't as don't seem as dire.
If we win that game by 14 points, it definitely doesn't seem dire. Yeah.
Win it by half a point, if that's even possible, and I'll be happy.
But it's nowhere near comparable. You know, just look up Purdue, look up a Purdue highlight game from 2012, 2013, 2014, and see, you know, 5,000 people in the stands and a team down 35-0 at halftime. Yeah,
a lot of leg room. A lot of leg room.
Yeah,
a lot of arm room.
Went to a lot of games during that time period. It's nowhere near comparable. It just isn't.
Not even. It's not even the same stratosphere. Big words to me.
So
hey, and you like pulled off the Indiana State score like out the top of your head. Like, I was like, "Wow, he actually, that was right."
I'm killing it, man. I was there and we won. So I, you know, look
yeah,
at me.
Really that was on top a, of that was a scary game. I watched Purdue score that last touchdown at the very end, like from the concourse as I was walking out, because I had to be somewhere and was like nervous about that game, and finally watched I forget who it was that scored it, but it's like, okay. So I was like, had my head down the tunnel. I'm like, "All right, they scored. All right, I got to go now." But score predictions. What do you guys think?
Russ?
I was waiting for Dylan's Boilerware Billions.
Oh, no. Yeah, we got to save the best for last, Big Dog.
I guess I'll go first then in that case. Yeah. I'll say, how does 20-17 we hold on? Sound. Yeah.
I dig it. I mean, Boilers by a billion, of course. I'd like to go 17-10. 17-10 Boilers. A nice comfy 7-point win, a little tutty, you know, a little win by a touchdown. And Walter gets to like breathe a little bit, because I think he's pretty, you know, he's feeling the pressure and you know, it's I'm just hoping that for Walt's sake, I just want the guy to be able to breathe a little bit. So a 17-10 win at Wisconsin. The curse is relieved, and we all can have a little fun on a podcast finally, because I miss having that. I miss having fun podcasts and when we're not talking about firings and bad things.
I mean, I got a fun thing we can talk about at the end here.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what they call it.
Dylan, spoiler alert, I was going to, my actual score prediction was 17-10.
God, and, dude, look at this brain today. If Frank and I...
Yeah, I mean, and this is just going off feel, and honestly, I'm a little frustrated after hearing what I heard earlier today, listening to the Wisconsin podcast, because literally they were saying things like, yeah, I don't expect to see many starters in the second half and things like that. And again, this is a team that you know, had to play its starters down to the fourth quarter against a MAC school. And so they're really, I mean, they're coming off of two beatdowns in a row, and they see this as a way to kind of calm the waters among the fan base. Cause they're, you know, fans aren't happy. They expected to be a little bit more competitive against USC and a little bit more competitive against Alabama. And, you know, they've gotten a little taste of reality and that, you know, they're not as good as they thought. So I think that there's going to be a little bit more desperation, from Wisconsin, and I think that, you know, a couple early mistakes, a early Purdue score can kind of rattle them a little bit. Hoping for the best here. Russ, you had said you had something positive to talk about.
Yeah, so basketball is a month away, right, y'all? Like, we're starting to see some of the preseason hype and some of the preseason breakdowns by people out there, and they put out the media's preseason Big Ten team, as well as who their preseason player of the year was. And, you know, like you said, spoiler alert, it's a Boilermaker. Braden Gus Hartwig Smith is the preseason player of the year. Did y'all see that picture? Like, it literally looks like he's been hanging out with Gus Hartwig and like getting some beard tips or something.
But it's a nice beard.
Braden Smith was the only unanimous selection on the team, which it throws me off that the preseason team is 10 players, and then postseason, obviously, it's like a 5-person first, second, third team, but whatever, here nor there. But Braden was the only Boilermaker on the squad, but he was the only unanimous pick on the squad.
I do want to address this comment here that Patrick thinks that we're dreaming and that this is not a Disney movie. Would love to hear your take on how things go down at Camp Randall. Would love a more of an explanation, basically, is what I'm asking for. Welcome all opinions here. So would love to know what you're thinking there.
Yeah, and keep in mind too, Patrick, if you haven't been watching us a whole lot, or you're a recent listener, we started this because we're the positive Purdue guys, right? Like, there's a lot of negative in the Purdue fan base, so we try to be positive. So we're not going to sit here and, you know, go, hey, yeah, we're gonna go up there and get beat by 30. Like,
fight me, Pat.
I mean, I watch every game and every sport, hoping that we win. I don't ever watch a game expecting to lose.
Well, and we're talking about a fan base and a team that's beaten how many top five teams as an unranked team. So, like, really, it's any given Saturday with Purdue. So, you know, why not?
Wait, is this Kennedy from Always Irish? No, I don't think so. Always Irish guy.
Yeah. On the Braden subject, right? I mean, as soon as I saw Braden Smith was voted preseason player of the year, I got ready, like got my shield up, like ready to defend Braden, because I knew all the, you know, oh, he's only good because of Zach Edey. You know, he just tosses the ball to Zach Edey and lets him dunk it. There's no skill involved in that. It was going to come out. But I mean, in reality, you look at his numbers without Zach on the floor, he's still in 99th percentile in assist percentage. You know, there's so many things that and that's just, it's just an ignorant take on basketball. And I asked the question to several people on Twitter today, if not him, then who? And it was some like transfer, you know, like that was always the answer. It was like, oh, this guy who's transferring in, you know, and it's like, okay, come on. Like, I can't think of anyone more deserving. And I think that it goes to show that we're not going to take as big of a dip as what people are expecting in basketball, just to start that conversation a bit. But excited to see it. Couldn't be more happy for the guy.
I really hope he deserves it, in my opinion. The beard.
Yeah, he should. Vibe. Yeah, it looks awesome. Yeah, it really does. Some people disagree. Some people aren't a fan. But I think that
and he's driving a Cybertruck around. I mean,
yeah, yeah, I saw that. It's pretty crazy.
The first teaser or like statement I'll make on Purdue basketball this year is Painter has got both the dream and the nightmare scenario, right? Like we got a very deep roster. We've just lost the 2-time national player of the year. So now we've got to figure out what's our identity, but he's got a lot of choices, you know, right? Like Trey Kaufman is very talented. We got 2 7-footers again. Surprise, surprise. We had 2 7-footers. We've got athletic guys in Colvin and Heidi that are itching to have their shot. We've got some great freshmen coming in. We've got probably the best junior guard tandem in the country coming back. Like it's going to be a lot of fun. There might be some growing pains early in the season just because you've got those choices of like, hey, let's try this. Let's try this. Let's try this before we figure out our true identity. But it's kind of an embarrassment of talented players, embarrassment of riches this year.
Yeah. And how many programs around the country can say like has the problem where it's like, like we basically have 2 locks in our starting 5. And that's it. You know, how many programs around the country are in that same scenario where it's like, okay, Braden's going to start, Fletcher's going to start. And then it's kind of a toss up. TKR probably, but you know, I mean, it just like how many other programs can say that?
Yeah, I think TKR is that every year. The other two, really, because he started every game last year. But yeah,
yeah, that's a good point. But yeah, I mean, the other two, I mean, you throw Heidi, you can make a case for Heidi, you can make a case for Miles Colvin, especially with how he played in the tournament. You can make a case for Will Burr, you can make a case for Jacobson. I mean, there's Jakari Harris has played really well in the summer, from what I've heard. I mean, there's all sorts of potential there. So, and then, you know, just imagine, you know, if things would have worked out with, what's his name? Cannon Catchings. That just would have added even more chaos to the mix. So
hell Patrick has followed up.
He says Purdue 30, Wisconsin 0. Walters is carried off the field.
Damn right.
I truly hope that happens. Cool. He, you know, they toss him up in the air, you know, and singing for he's a jolly good fellow, and they all go get ice cream after. kind of what I'm envisioning there. Just. kind of piggyback.
They all get some cheese curds over there in Wisconsin. Yeah,
and then the narrative in and they all lived happily ever after,
you know, and then Wisconsin folds as a football program and we never have to worry about them again. Amen. We just wrote a book. Look at you, Pat. Thanks, man.
Amen. And blow her up.
Yeah, it's not a Disney movie yet. We just made it. There we go. Yeah, need to get a hold
we
of
just
us,
wrote
somebody.
A Disney movie. Look at us. Shout out, hire us, Walt. Rest in peace.
Well, unless anyone has anything else, Dylan, you wanna sign us off as a
ladies and gentlemen. We had a wonderful evening here with all of you, Patrick, Cody, Nick, and the many others that listen, the thousands and millions of people that listen every week to this program. We thank you all so much and we love you very much. You're loved. I know we've gone through a rough streak here of a little, you know, Purdue football, and you know, we're not, you know, a lot of us have been busy during this season and not on the program. Russ, I'm trying to be sentimental here and talk to the people.
No, that's why it's throwing me off. Like, we got the wild man of the podcast that's like giving a speech like he's sitting on his couch in front of a fireplace.
Love
and
it.
Like being real serious.
I'm trying to end it, Dylan, like I'm.
Dylan, I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you. I meant to say this earlier. Yeah. Our RSS feed gives us all sorts of analytics and insights about our listeners. Not to like their address, like the city that they're in. In the last couple of months, we had a lot of us in Finland. So shout out to our Finnish folks out there.
Shout out to
actually
Finnish
over the
homies.
Last 30 days, the majority of our listens on Spotify have been in Finland, and it totally is people in Finland. It's totally not someone using a VPN. I want to believe that. So I just want to believe that we're just really popular among the Finnish. I would love to come visit you all, play some disc golf. I know you all love your disc golf over there in Finland.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. That's
27% of all the courses in the world are in that country. So, anyway, shout out to the Finnish out there.
So, as the leading Purdue podcast of Finnish listeners, as the official Finnish podcast of Purdue Athletics, we're happy that you all got to hang out with us for about an hour. We're happy to hear you. Happy to see you, Pat. Good seeing you, brother. Cody, all these guys, all these legends. Who's coming to Oregon? I'm not. Are you guys?
Probably not.
Wow. Look at that.
Unless my tickets don't sell, I guess I'll have to use them.
Well, what a problem. No, Nick, we won't. Apparently none of us will be there. Damon and Chris, to be determined, I guess. Hopefully those two will be back next week. Until then, you get to listen to our sultry voices. So thank you all for listening. We love you so very much. Tiny hugs, big kisses. Or no, it's big hugs, tiny kisses. I think that's it. Big hugs, tiny kisses.
What is going on?
We love you very much. Boiler up, hammer down, beat Wisconsin.